For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
All right, people, here we go. Block Party is out. I'm your host, Mike Wall. Thanks for watching. If you're enjoying, please subscribe, rate, review on our YouTube channel, Process to Perform. You can hit me up, MikeWall68 on X, Twitter, Process to Perform on Instagram. Our show, as always, is part of the Believe Network and sponsored by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from Major League Baseball, golf, the National Basketball Association playoffs, as well as the NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. Quick note. I was watching some Joker highlights this morning because I can't say that I'm a big enough fan of basketball anymore. And it was my favorite sport, but I just don't watch as much as I should. Nikola Jokic is like, the way that that guy can manipulate a basketball game, how good he is on the ball, his IQ, the way he sees the court. I don't know that I've seen a player that's better. He's not Michael Jordan. He's not Kobe. I don't know that I've seen a player that has that combination of skill and court vision. It's just so masterful to watch. He just does things. You start scratching your head like it's not possible. And none of it's athletic. I mean, he probably gets a little bit bump up because he's so unathletic, quite frankly. He's just lumbering around. He can't jump. But good God, is that man good. So we're shooting this on Wednesday, and slowly the NFL kind of schedule is matriculating down. We already know who the Packers are going to play and this and that. And you know that now they're going to play for sure in Brazil. I think versus the Eagles, that may be opening weekend. I'll say this about the Brazil deal. You know that the NFL is trying to expand worldwide. You just saw La Liga is trying to get into the U.S. market by playing games here. So, like, this is a thing. We obviously are in Germany now. We're in the U.K. for over a decade. And you like it. Brazil's a different plant or a different animal because of the distance traveled. But you got to say, going into the South American market, expanding down there, introducing them to American football, and just the opportunity to go, the opportunity to go to Brazil on a paid for trip. It's a business trip, but the opportunity to go down there, it's never easy logistically. And depending on who your guys are, your sports performance division, they might have you doing too much or not enough. And there's all of kind of those things to play with because there are challenges. And this will be different from a time zone standpoint, but just from a travel standpoint and a food standpoint and all of that stuff, there are challenges that you have to deal with. But what an experience, man. I think that'll be absolutely incredible. I don't know if I was a fan if I would go down there for that game. Like, I don't know if I'm going to Brazil because the Packers are playing there. But hopefully they pack that stadium. They have huge soccer stadiums down there. They're 100,000-seat stadiums. So hopefully they fill that. And it should be a lot of fun to watch. You know, this is really from a fan's perspective and a retired person that doesn't work with the team anymore, this is a tough part of the NFL season. There's so much that goes into preparation for an NFL athlete. And right now, I feel because they're in the building, they just had rookie mini camps and OTAs are happening. They're going to have a mini camp here coming soon. This is kind of from a fan's perspective, this is the time you're kind of privy to seeing what's going on, like how they're making the sausage, so to speak, inside the building. Most high level players have three separate parts of their offseason preparation. And I was going to kind of take you guys through that today because, again, player perspective, trying to give you some insight here. Because on the outside, you really only pay attention to what's going on now because these teams are such good brand managers and they're so socially aware that all of the, you know, we're walking out of the door, we're asking a funny question, we're high-fiving the social media guy on the way out, we have some highlights of an innocuous play that doesn't mean anything. We do a great job of that because you're feeding that awareness, which is important. And it's the reason that these teams are valued at such a high number now. But just from a preparation standpoint, I don't know where this ranks on. I'll let you figure out what you think is the most, you know, kind of ranked in value of the most to least important of the three phases for an elite level kind of NFL athlete. The first part of that offseason is obviously when the season's done, and whether you spend 3 days like me off or you spend 3 weeks like most of the guys now, you're usually away from the facility, particularly in Green Bay where it's, you know, it's negative 26 outside in February. Who wants to be there necessarily if you don't have to? Go back to your hometown, breathe some fresh air or wherever you might live. You start training at that hometown gym. You start, maybe you go back to your college and they have a facility there that you like, or your old strength coach. Maybe you go to a private facility. Maybe you go down to one of these great places in Miami. There's a House of Athlete. There's a Bomberino's. There's, you know, a ton of good places down there to train. The benefit there, I think, is quite obvious in that you're going to get a ton of guys from across the league and across the country to kind of come together. And now you're pushing each other in this early part of the offseason, which I absolutely think is super, super valuable. Most of the structure that you're going to go through is the same, regardless of where you're at. If you have somebody that understands weight program is trying to program, and very, very generally speaking, you're going to spend 3 or 4 weeks working on kind of joint mobility, muscle pliability, kind of getting back into, this is kind of before the general physical preparedness, but just making sure everything moves right. Are we moving right? And then you're going to spend 3 or 4 weeks in general physical preparedness. That's just like gross motor skill development, a lot of compound movements. That would be like some gym bro workouts, just some, you know, maybe some pushing the cars as well, maybe some strongman stuff, but just general physical preparedness, nothing sports specific. And guys are trying to just kind of build that baseline again. You're trying to build up that foundation from the ground up. Now, some of your guys are going to have parameters from the team that they want to see. Like, we need you to come in at this weight, or we need you want to come in at this body fat percentage, or maybe they have a protocol from the nutritionist. They would like to see you eat this way. But a lot of the guys now, when they go to these other places, one of the benefits is going there is they're going to have a lot of the stuff on site. They're going to have their own ideas of maybe not from the team standpoint, or maybe, you know, like I always talk about when, you know, Steve Hutchinson got drafted, he was 6'5", 315. So all of a sudden my coach goes, oh, you need to be 315. And I'm like 295. And it's like, well, that didn't work, right? But there's no justification for it. So you'll get a different perspective on what you should weigh or what would help you move the best as it pertains to you as the athlete, not necessarily what they're thinking inside the building of what makes the perfect ideal football player, because that body type is not necessarily for you. Most guys, as you get older, are going to have a routine that they go through. They're going to feel really comfortable with it early on. Like the younger guys are the best kind of, you know, time to get these guys is as soon as possible, because you go, okay, this is the process that we're going to go through. This is the foundation we're going to lay. This is the kind of the 6 to 8 weeks that we want to work on right now. And then at that point, you get around beginning of April, and depending on that time. So the next phase of that, by the way, would be you're starting to develop a lot. You're starting to get kind of with a very like football, more football specific strength phase and the power development phase. And then obviously there's some cardio stuff that you would go along with that. I, of course, would like to throw in that you'd start working your technical work as much as possible. Then you're going to go back to your facility. So phase two is we're going to go back. So we're in the mini camps, we're in the OTAs. This is the time where all the photos get taken. This is the time where all the fan interaction stuff happens. Fans love this part of the offseason. The reality is that the value to the athlete in this part of the season, because remember, it's like you're building up somewhere else. You do the mobility, you do the general physical preparedness. And I'm talking about guys that like are working out in the offseason, not just, you know, some guys just don't do this. And then you're getting into that strength or power phase. And now you have to move and you go back to a facility. And the value to the athlete is really, it's kind of on a sliding scale based on where you happen to be employed. Because if the philosophy in lifting is different than what you've been doing, like you've got guys in the league that for a long time were like, hey, we're going to do a round of circuits, or we're going to do a circuit training. We're going to do some HIIT stuff. We're going to do some, we're Olympic lifters. You know, we just do single joint exercises. We don't like to load anybody. There's so many different ways to look at this, that if you go into a place that's completely different than what you were, than the path that you were on, or they're not as taxing, or they don't value the same things that maybe you value, have learned to value, well, it's really different if you're just from a standpoint of like, I'm trying to improve myself as much as I can during the off season. And a lot of times these places might start over at like day one. We come in, we get acclimated, we're doing mobility again. So you just spent like 8 to 10 weeks of grinding. And it's like, all right, let's go back to day one again. And so that part is sometimes difficult. But again, it all depends on where you're at. You could have the best program in the world that completely aligns with what you want. You could have a program that doesn't align with you at all. Different gyms prioritize like movement over absolute strength. Gyms are into kettlebells over Olympic lifts. Some coaches like to train like the really complex movements. Some guys want to just like, hey, we'll do, you know, weighted plyos instead of, you know, clean and press. Everything works. I think the big deal is understanding that everything works. You have to understand the context that it's put in, understand the purpose behind it, buy into it a little bit, and then also understand that when you're in this facility and you have to be there, then from a player's perspective, it's like, okay. And I used to do this like when I went to Carolina and I had to be at workouts. I just literally brought in all my stuff and I said, hey, if I do your stuff, deal is you got to let me do my stuff. Because, you know, at that time, my stuff is what got me the contract, and I don't want to start doing your stuff because I'm worried that your stuff is not going to get me the results that I've been getting. So you have to kind of make that all work, but you got to work within the context of like what's good for the building, what's good for the team. If you're really prioritizing your training in the off season and you have to switch it up, then for an athlete, it's like sometimes maybe it's not the best deal, but how do I put a positive spin on this and how do I get the most out of kind of this phase, right? So you go through the phase, you got some on the field stuff that you got to do. You're back in the building. You're probably meeting more than you want, etc. You finish off that last mini camp. And let's say it's, you know, mid-June. It used to be right around June 16th, 17th, because a bunch of us would get married on June 17th, right after the last mini camp. This third phase begins right when OTAs end. Athletes usually go back to wherever they were doing phase one. So if it's at their college, private gym, hometown, whatever it is, that's where they go back to. And now you're going to really just get into the difference being because it's private and they're geared for you, or you go to your college and they're understanding where you're at in the development cycle. You're going to go right into that power and speed. I don't know why my camera is doing this today, guys. Sorry about that. But you're going to go right into that power and speed development for a heavy, heavy block of kind of more football specific movements, very, very heavy on power development, very, very heavy on speed development. Then you're going to break for the 4th of July. Players usually take some break. Maybe they go on vacation, maybe they're visiting family, but right around 4th of July is when you start going like, okay, after this holiday, let's blow it out, have a good time. But after this holiday, it's like football. So there's a light switch that flips for a lot of guys. I remember my wife used to be like, dude, you get kind of mean after the 4th. And I go, yeah, it's just kind of I'm getting back to like, I got to go perform again. So my personality, unfortunately, that's how I was. I shifted a little bit, probably didn't. My wife was a very patient lady. What happens from a training standpoint is your strength coach, whoever you're with, maybe, and you could still be back at the facility for all of this. You got a great program back at the facility. Some guys will just stay there year round, or maybe they have family, so they're going to stay there year round. The last couple of weeks, you really start acclimatizing to what the demands of training camp would be, whether it's like the test, whether it's just, you know, we used to do a lot of stuff on time now. So we would do like these max effort or 90 or 85% effort reps that lasted 6 to 8 seconds, and then take a 25 second break. Why? Well, it mimicked what we were doing, obviously, from a rep standpoint. And then you could kind of build out your rep or set scheme based on, you know, how much volume of work you wanted to do, how you wanted to test that part of your, not only your, it's not necessarily even a cardio, but like your metabolic demand, right? So what part of your energy cycle did you want to tax that day? So that stuff is all really good. Obviously a lot more positional work towards the end. A lot of guys will make the mistake of not doing positional work until the last couple of weeks and try to get brushed up. I think that's a huge mistake because it's just like lifting weights. You're greasing the groove, right? If you want to get good at your pass set, you got to pass set every day. You don't pass set for an hour at the end. But you're fine. You're really, those last couple of weeks before you get to camp, you're really just thinking about fine tuning. The off seasons have changed over the years. Certainly the CBA has altered, I think, some of the value that the teams can offer players. So I think a lot of times when I make these, it sounds like I'm saying that the teams aren't good. It's not necessarily that. I think, you know, who affected that the most? Because there's good coaches out there that want to coach. But who affected the CBA, the Players Association, when they got screwed over by the NFL with as far as how much money they could take, the concessions that they started taking were like, well, we don't want to touch a football. And like, you know, famously Jeff Saturday didn't want to rehab with Peyton Manning. So he didn't want to touch a football. He put it in the NFL collective bargaining that centers don't have to touch a football for the first X amount of weeks. And we can't be in the building that much. And all that stuff's like, I think it's, for me, it's like net good because I see the value of being away, but I could also, if I was working for a team, I could say, listen, you're handcuffing us. The value that we could be offering isn't able to be offered because of all of the CBA blockades to spending time with you. Does that make sense? I think the real difference now between like when I was going through and what you see now is like there's so much money in the sport. And largely because of the CBA, there are so many private gyms, trainers, facilities, performance groups that they're going after that business. You've got footwork guys, you got speed guys, you got technique guys, you got lifting guys, you got, you know, improved and increased number of performance coaches. So more guys are getting their degrees in kinesiology, more guys are getting certified, more guys are getting their master's degree in some sort of exercise science. So you're getting a lot of people, and they're not necessarily like, you know, I always say if I'm starving, I'm in a boat, like I want to talk to the fisherman. I don't care about the oceanographer that much, like, because I want to eat, right? But you do get a lot of guys who are very science-based and very knowledgeable about what they're trying to accomplish with you. That goes back to another point. You see a lot of there's always a big debate in, I think, a lot of different, you know, competitive arenas, but certainly in sports, on this kind of goes to the data leading decisions. You see a lot of guys that are very scientific based when it comes to like, this is how we're going to develop. This is what the science says. And those guys are always good, but they don't ever seem to be as good as the guys that are rooting their protocols on science as well, but also largely on context, on the individual, on the situation. We have gotten really, really science-based with a lot of the stuff that they do, especially in the building, because you're managing so many people. It's an easier way to parse and snip. What they miss out on, I think, sometimes is some of the individual context on how to treat guys based on positional requirements, based on body type, based on personality, based on training load, based on sleep last night, all of those things that go in. So that's actually the art and the science that, you know, coming together and building a really good program is understanding I have something that my calculator says, but there's also something that my eyes are seeing and I'm listening to when I'm interacting with this person. The amount of money that there's to be made in the National Football League is so great that now if you're an ambitious player looking for that edge, you're looking for, where can I go? Who can I meet with? What can I learn? What can I develop as to get to that next tier of salary? Because the gap between any two players in the National Football League is probably less than 30%. And I mean, here's what I mean by that. If I go to the Green Bay Packers this weekend, and I watch a minicamp, and let's say I just watch the offensive line. Zach Tom, Elgton Jenkins, maybe, you know, those are the top two linemen. The difference between those guys, like if you put those guys at, you know, a 10 out of 10, the majority of the rest of the people are going to be within 30% of them, like 7, 8, 6-ish, right? 9. There's no like 2s out there, is my point. There's no guys that are like, or 5s. There's no guys that are just terrible. Certainly guys that are in the league. If you took those guys and you played them in the same offense and the same plays against the same defenders, the same amount of reps, they're going to grade out about 20 to 30% lower than your top. I'm talking about your top guys. Maybe I'm not using the right guys right here because those guys aren't necessarily, you know, Lane Johnson, Laremy Tunsil, Trent Williams, Jason Kelsey before he retired. Hi, Linderbaum, Tyler, the kid from Baltimore. Those guys, right? The best in the league are going to play better, but they're not twice as good as the average player, okay? But then you start looking at the salary of the really good guys, and you just saw Penei Sewell. Penei Sewell is an elite guy, $28 million a year, okay? So he bumped up the tackle, not left or right tackle, the tackle position. He bumped it by $3 million over, I think, less than 2 years. An average tackle in the league is making, if they're, you know, 8 to 12, maybe. I'm talking about an average guy. Maybe a starter. Journeyman, you know, 8, which is a ton of money. But you start thinking, are they twice as good or 2.5 times as good or almost 3 times as good? No. But that's the pay scale differential for these high-level players. So if I can go from a non-starter to a starter, I've doubled my salary. If I can go from a starter to a guy who's well-respected, I've probably doubled it again. If I go to a guy who's going to the Pro Bowl or is a top free agent, from where I started at $5 million to $28 million, it's a 5x return. So these phases of the offseason are vital. And when you have guys that are like, oh, I don't want, they don't like Jaire Alexander doesn't come in for workouts. Well, we don't know why he didn't come out for workouts last year. I know he's there this year, but does he think that he's losing his value from coming in or not? That's what you like, the question you got to ask yourself. And that's what's always like, the bottom line is this, the whole process is important. But as a player, you really have to like your preparation is everything. And if you can get 5 pounds stronger over here, you know, a tenth of a second faster over there, or you just, the knowledge that you learn at the building is worth it for to live the entire year there and figure out how to get more from the coaching staff as far as, you know, time. You have to uncover every rock because the money is so different. You know, in a finite career, the money is so different from, you know, from average to good to great to elite. And so you got to make the most of your time. And that's why there's so much business around there. That's why these guys have so many options. Like I used to go to, literally, I went to UNLV and then I'd go for a week. I'd go to Iowa, I'd go to Arizona, I'd go to Florida. I'd go check out places for like a week, but I'd always come back to my home base because I had a really good like family foundation there. Same thing when I moved in and started going to San Diego. I was more about the environment I was in. I kind of knew what I wanted to do. And I learned something new from a different kind of mentor guru every year, but I wasn't just going to spend time at somebody's gym. But now if there was a gym where only the best O-linemen were going and pushing each other. And I felt like, well, this is actually interesting for me. So if there was a lot of guys going there, I probably wouldn't go because I would think to myself, well, if you've commoditized this, you're probably not paying the individual the attention that they need. So I'm going to go somewhere where I can get one-on-one or one-on-two kind of information about my game and how I'm going to get better. And I'd probably go to a specialist in, you know, speed, technique, develop or strength, etc. as opposed to going to a place that's just churning out like these combine guys. It's like, oh, I got 20 guys in here that played in the NFL. It's like, yeah, dude, but there's one of you. You can't coach 20 guys very well. I might as well go back to my facility because I'm sure you're running a stock program with stock drills and stock this. And it's like, that doesn't help individuals get better. But the bottom line is, like, right now we get all the action because they're with the teams, they're putting all their stuff on social media, and it's really important. But it's always, for me, it's kind of fun to think about, like, where are these guys going to get the most bang for their buck? Which phase matters the most to them? I don't know if there's a good answer. But I do know what you do to get your mind right before training camp is probably the most important. Also want to talk about this. There's a couple of surprises before we go into tape today. The Packers just signed, his name is Spencer, I'll butcher this, Waege, defensive lineman from the San Francisco 49ers. These are the kind of moves I really like, and I'm going to tell you why. Because this guy's a practice squad player, so I don't know if he's any good. He's like 6'5", 295, so good build. For me personally, that's the kind of build that might give me some trouble. Former teammate of Christian Washington, North Dakota State University. So he's a small-town player, but he's got a good frame. So my thought process with Christian, as you guys know, was if you go to North Dakota State University and you're the athlete that he is, you obviously weren't at some point, so you probably had to persevere a little bit more to get where you're at. I like that mentality. What I really like is that he's been coached by arguably now the best in the business, Chris Kurosek. Or I say his name wrong every time. Kosarek. It's Kosarek. He is, I was with him in Miami. He's the best D-line coach that I've seen, aside from his mentor, who was Washburn, who was an old Detroit Lions guy. He's amazing. He's the guy that worked with Sue a lot. But Chris is he's very intense. He's a great teacher. He's a great developer of talent. You see how good the San Francisco 49ers D-line is. And I'm always curious to see, and I don't know if we'll get this information. You know, this is, again, stuff that we're not privy to. But I'm always curious to see, when you come from a top, top program, like the San Francisco 49ers defensive line room, how do you find the practice standards, the communication standards, like the way that you go about your business in your new building? And I always think about, we had this guy in Miami, Byron Maxwell. Byron Maxwell is part of the Legion Boom, I think it was the second wave of the Legion Boom in Seattle. Max was another one of those Seattle guys who wasn't like a highly sought draft pick, ended up having a really good career, took a big free agent deal, went to Miami. And when he got down there, Max is one of those dudes that would just come hang out, and, you know, he always getting stretched out and stuff. He's a really, really funny guy. And I was just so curious about Pete because, you know, the aura around Pete Carroll and his enthusiasm and the way that, the real aura was like, they practice so, so hard. And I can tell you firsthand, just from, you know, working with some guys up there now before Pete had just moved on, like, their practices are different than other practices. But I used to ask Max, like, what do you think? Like, during training camp, compare what we're doing out there to Seattle. Because you got to remember, when I went back to Miami, I had been, the last time I had really seen football was like when I was playing, the rules were different. So the intensity of practice, the length, the duration, the frequency, different. So I'm watching this Miami tape like, man, I know it's hot down here, but like, what are we doing? Like, this is, Max would go, guys here could not practice in Seattle. They just couldn't handle the intensity. And he said part of the reason was the weather. You kind of figured, but they practiced so much more intensely and competitively at Seattle with Pete than they did down in Miami, that it wasn't a wonder that the team wasn't as good. Now, this is, of course, multiple coaching staffs ago and everything, and I think things have even evolved from there as far as what the expectations are from a practice standpoint. But old school Pete Carroll, let's go, draft, develop guys, play them. They got to really earn their second contract kind of thing. We're going to churn through. Like, that's what he grew up on. And I'm always interested to see when you come from a really, really high-level program with a number one defense, you know, what you see with, like, the Green Bay Packers staff and, you know, especially with a new defensive coordinator coming. So that'll be interesting. This should also, coming up, should be, like, the first preview of our new Packers defense with the new DC, former BC head coach. I think it's Jeff Hafley. I'm going to say Hafley. Maybe it's Hafley, but I don't. What do I know? Bringing in a new scheme, a couple of new coaches, most notably new passing and run game coordinators, Derek Ainsley and Anthony Campanile. Jason, now this is interesting because we were just talking about the defensive line. Jason Rebovich is taking over as the head D-line coach. He worked as the outside linebackers coach 2 years ago. So he had Preston and Rashawn. He was a pass rush specialist in 2023, which is a kind of a newish position, but it's really the assistant D-line coach. They just wanted to give you a different bill. I would really like to see how he teaches pass rush. I think that would be like, for, you know, I'm interested to see that. Interesting how he talks about spacing. Interesting how he talks about cutting angles. What the priorities are? How do they read? What are they? You know, what are they? What are the tiptoes and takeaways that they're using? I can't say for sure whether or not the pass rush has been a strength or an area of opportunity for Green Bay. Like, we don't have a guy with double digit sacks last year, but I think we had, you know, I think Rashawn had 9, Preston had 8, Kenny had 7. I know there's a half there somewhere, but guys that are producing, certainly Kenny was good last year. You always feel like, and Rashawn was coming off injury, and you always feel like Rashawn maybe, I always think that he could have more, but I know that he works with, you know, I've kind of watched him do on some private stuff too. And why he's not getting more, we talked about it on this. I can tell you why. Preston seems to just be very, very consistent. He's going to get what he's going to get. They're right in the middle. They had 45 sacks last year. Sacks don't tell the story. I'm kind of being lazy with that. But if you watch the tape, you know, how many, you know, generally speaking, if you have 45 sacks, you probably had 130 opportunities converted on a third of them ish, you know, 135 opportunities converted on 30 of them. So what's this defense going to look like? Well, I cut up some Boston Eagles tape because I like cutting up tape, but I was interested. You hear a lot of things about, okay, we're going to play a post safety. We're going to sack the box. It's a 4-3, which is really a 4-2 in nickel, but is it really? It depends what kind of guys we have. So let's see if we can't figure out some little nuggets of information about watching some of the BC defense, okay? So the first thing you'll see here, single safety high. This is a cover 3 look. They're in a 43. You see, I've highlighted the safety down close to the line of scrimmage. This is a recurring theme, by the way, on this defense. And I don't know, a lot of this stuff's not going to travel. First of all, they're playing, I think this is a Florida State game. Florida State's better athletically than BC. The Green Bay Packers are better athletically than BC. So there's, you don't want to go like player for player. Or you don't want, you know, there's some of that you got to be careful about. Certainly if they have bad tackle technique, that does tell a story. Not that they do. Well, maybe we'll see. Things like, you know, being able to switch, you know, man defense, things on, you know, how they mask things. Like, we'll get into that a little bit. But just generally speaking, one of the things that was interesting in this film, and I'll probably bring it up again, is how close, and it might just be the Florida State tape, but how they play that on the ball defender, because they play this guy in a position where you, if you're trying to dig him out from the outside, you can't. Certainly you could crack on him right now and the corner's got to come down and close. So they could run like a down and around with the, you see on the top of the screen, you got your X receiver and then you got like an F or a Y hipped off. You could certainly run a crack play here. You'd have a hard time with the defensive end, but they're trying to put this guy in a position. It looks like to me where there could be a natural rub to the flat if they were running man. But if it's a run defense first, it's very hard to dig that guy out certainly from the X, but also really from the Y. He's so close to the line of scrimmage, you don't get that cushion. So they're artificially creating that confrontation at the line of scrimmage, which I generally speak and I really like. See, the safety comes up, the corner comes up, makes the play. We got all man here. There's no swap. So they go in motion down below. And this is one of the interesting things that you always wonder how they're going to play this. If they're playing like a zone match or they play man, do they want to switch any of this stuff off? depending on who the players are, yes, you can switch off in man. But it kind of, when you look at these toss plays, it puts you, whenever you do this and then you run like a toss crack, it puts you at a disadvantage because you're trying to get the receiver who's covering the motion guy. That guy doesn't want to get beat across the field. And we'll show that a little bit later. So you don't want to lag him. So if you keep up with him, you're now in a position to get cracked. The corner who's covering the outside receiver is going to step down, and it gives you some opportunity. So it's just how, you know, that's how offenses are trying to combat defenses. See, a linebacker does a good job getting outside, forcing the ball back in. Going across in coverage. You see the play action. They're going to run the wide drag here, okay? So they go play action, heavy, run sell by the offensive line. Linebacker play side really bites. And then they put the guy in the flat to take away your star player. And because of that, the backside's open. So this is just a linebacker read. But this is kind of, you know, it's like, how do you attack the single safety? Well, you know, if you got good tight ends, which we do have some in this division, you know, particularly in Minnesota, this is how they'll attack it. You play the man up here so they can, this, there's a ton of different ways to play these different screen looks up here when you run kind of a bunch or a tight trips look. You know, obviously everything's different because of the hash marks in college, but you're playing the man up on the point of the tip of the spear here. So in red, and then how are you going to play this with, you know, I think they're running the outside wide receiver screen. So you're going to stock block. You're going to take the inside guy and try to block the outside defender and then hope that the trail technique from the inside defender isn't able to catch up. So obviously they run a lot of this stuff because there's variations of this here. As you see, like, you're pretty close to hitting a home run right here. If this is just a little bit cleaner, there's a lot of variations of this, obviously, because now you can not throw the ball. You can hitch it and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So how do they pass this off? These are the kind of questions as you get to a more advanced level of defense. How do you want to handle kind of all this stuff? Usually like the tip of the spear guy, the cup guy can man, and then they'll switch on the back on the other two. There's a lot of different ways to do this. You see the Packers have done, you know, done this a couple of different ways. What I like again is how close they are to the line of scrimmage. It kind of breeds aggressiveness. Nice play here. We got man up. So we're looking at leverage right now. So there's an outside, there's a corner outside of the bottom of the screen that you can't see. But you can see that our safety has a little bit of outside leverage on the Y player here. And then I've highlighted the defensive end. He does a good job against this run. So this is just a handoff out of pistol. They go outside zone. Guy does a great job of penetrating. But you also see the outside man fights to get wide. And you have everybody filling their gaps. So we get the cutback that's forced by the defensive end. Good gang tackle. Great job. There's times in this game, and I think it's mostly against zone. You see the zone, you see the way the linebackers attack, and they'll have some predetermined stack stuff or, the defensive line will have some stunts. And we'll show a couple dogs and blitzes here as well. But one thing that was interesting in this game is at times the linebackers are 5 yards off and they're not reacting to plays very fast. The play speed and the diagnosis of a play isn't as fast as the defensive end position. And again, that could be style of play, or that could be just the, you know, the level of depth and experience that the guys that you're working with are. So we got brought him back in for man. They were in empty. They're bringing a guy off the edge to be the read. So the Florida State runs a lot of zone read. When you bring this guy back in, we'll go back right here. So you bring the guy back in motion against a man defense, you'll notice that the guy that he's playing against is still outside leverage. Why? Well, because when you're in man and you bring that guy back into motion, you still don't want to get leveraged back out on the bubble. Like, that's his biggest fear. So what happens is when you play a lot of man, we're just talking ball now, and because I think the Packers are going to see a lot of this, and I like it, but these are the different ways that you attack it. You bring the guy back in motion. If that linebacker stays, or that man player stays with outside leverage there, well, one of the benefits for the offense is that they know that he's a step behind if they go to like an inside zone run or a middle zone run on the opposite side. So again, maybe you pick up 6-7 yards there because you can't fill the hole because you're a step slow. They do a little zone drop here. So they got three coming to the weak side of the passing strength. They got one coming off the right tackle, but the defensive tackle is going to drop. That puts high pressure on the up top corner, who's got to play the fade. He's got plenty of room, ends up making a nice play here. You know, so that's always what's important. Well, having a real lockdown corner like Alexander, you're going to put him in positions where sometimes you're going to have to live with him getting beat, quite frankly, because he's not going to be perfect on this stuff. He's a really good player, but I think everybody would rather lose a game because you put the opportunity for greatness in Alexander's hands than playing conservative, because I think he's that kind of player. Here we go again, okay? This is kind of what I'm talking about. This is a head scratcher, and this is just be the singular play call or indicative of something else. You get down to the red zone. You go into a single high man look, and you rush four. This is too easy. You're not going to be able to do this in National Football League. This is carve you up central. If you're only going to rush four and play man across the board, you're donezo. You have your safety down already to play a lurker or a robber. You got the single high, and you know you're going to have to play down there. It's like these days you're playing 22 man or you're bringing pressure, right? I mean, I'm oversimplifying the game, but just playing single safety, man, linebackers drop down there. I don't think you're going to see a lot of that from the BC Packers. I just left this in because I love the tackle, man. Right in the hole. Great shot. Okay, here we go. Man coverage. You see, we got empty. You got trips down to the right and kind of a bunch look. Now we're not playing at the tip of the spear here. We're not playing at the point of attack. So they're doing that so they don't get picked. They're all on different levels so they can run through it. Okay, so it's not the open field. You see up top, we got man defense. Now they're going to show pressure. They drop a D tackle, which, yeah, listen, dropping D tackles is tough, to be quite fair, but it ends up working out. The guy drops the ball. Maybe the quarterback makes a bad pass because he sees the guy. You don't know, but expect to see some of this. I'm never a big fan of dropping these guys, quite frankly. I think you do it, and if it spooks the quarterback, I think that's fantastic. Certainly, from a blocking standpoint, you can make a mistake here. In other words, you can sit on the DT. He leaves and the linebacker goes and he gets through, you know, so there are those things there. I just don't, you know, back in the day, if a guy walked up, you just grabbed him. You made the call. You grabbed that guy, didn't let him go and didn't let him drop. Right. Like I might just tell the quarterback, hey, I'm letting the D tackle go and I'm grabbing the linebacker or vice versa. And then they just know like, okay, that guy's going to be hot. If he's showing up, you'll know immediately. And if he drops, like it didn't surprise you. So this is an interesting look. They're going to run a zone read here. And I put these guys over because the linebackers are shifted over because of the position of the running back. And you see they're going to read off this defensive end. But you see this little squiggle. Like there's nobody on this backside hole to fill because they're lined up in man coverage across the board with a single safety again. So everybody's slanting that way. And the defensive end gets leverage. And it's not the first time that this has happened. And this is really a function of how they're lining their linebackers, how they're lining that outside defensive player and what his responsibilities are. Because he's having to close down on the option play. And he sees all these guys moving away from him. And his eyes get off the running back. But there's a huge gap behind him that's not being filled by one of those linebackers. So the responsibility, like the weight is pretty heavy on that defensive end right here. I think I might have an end zone show with this. Let me see. Nope. Well, tough break. Okay, so now we got the quick toss here. Great job filling. So again, you're looking at a single safety look. You got a 4-2 in the middle. So this is the kind of defense you expect to see a lot of, by the way. And now you just start picking out like Xavier McKinney, maybe Javon Bullard's here, maybe Keyshawn Nixon's over, you know, one of these guys, maybe Evan Williams is in. Like, you got some really interesting, I think, options now. And we'll see how Stokes turns out to be the, you know, maybe the other corner. Maybe it's Valentine or Ballantyne. We don't know. This is just such an egregious no-no, though. Please don't do this. And you see this. I'll never forget. I was down in Miami coaching. We lost the game because they put Cam Wake, who's our best pass rusher and team leader, they put him on the wheel route just like this play. They brought two guys inside. They're trying to get cute. And, like, your defensive end can't guard your running back in space, right? This is why the Saints drafted Reggie Bush in 2005. Like, this is insane. So they bring two guys, and they go, oh, yeah, we'll just have them cover the wheel. Now, this is some cutesy college stuff. They were doing this, the pros. I think most guys have stopped doing this, I hope. But please, I'm just, you know, personal message. Coach, please don't do this. This is a losing play. You see the pace at which, I just want to highlight the pace of which we're not making decisions at the defensive end spot, okay? So there's two things going on here that you can continue to improve on. One, odd shift with your safety, your linebacker, your defensive end, and your backside. It's an odd way to shift the defense given where he is. They're playing this outside because of the slot. Now, you'll watch the linebacker show up late, but you see how slow we read this play. The defensive end in the NFL, you got to go force this play. Hey, I'm taking this guy. I'm forcing the action so everybody knows what's going on. I'm taking the play away, right? Now, we used to just do this by running what we'd call an end will stunt. So you'd spike the end, take the will over the top. This is what took the play away. There's some different ways to take care of that. Obviously, I won't get into that. But you see how wide this leverage player is. He's not able to close down. The quarterback's got way too much space, and this is just all you can eat. So this is where your scheme is getting beat. And there's a lot of plays with Florida State, because they run their quarterback, where you see the scheme getting stretched in a way that you're not very comfortable with if you're a Packers fan. Having said that, I think a lot of this at the higher level coaching, higher level playing, higher level athlete, I think takes care of itself. This is kind of another look where you're stacking that guy closer to the line of scrimmage. So you're forcing the action. He's going to come in, but your middle linebacker doesn't do a great job of getting to his spot. He's reading. He sees that bubble being pushed back at him from the defensive tackle. He needs to get over immediately, because you have that outside guy coming in and closing. You have your defensive end with your outside leverage. So the running back has one place to go, and you kind of got there a little bit late. And because of that, he's able to make that cut and get in. So when you look at a play like that, you go, Mike, is that coaching? Is that scheme? Yes, right? Is that just the guy not making the right read? That's probably what it is. But what you want to see in these situations, you go five in the box with a guy on the overhang on the outside, and he's going to enter. We're going to count him, okay? But if you put the middle linebacker in the middle and you say to the center and the left guard, hey, you're going to double team this guy and he's not going to pop over the top, I'm just telling you right now, like, that's a disaster, okay? Because that means I get, as the guard, I get more time to tee off on this defensive or that nose tackle, which allows us to get more vertical push, which makes the job more difficult for the linebacker, which makes the job easier for our running back. So just from a scheme standpoint, you got to put the guys in a situation from a defensive tackle. Man, I don't want a double team because the dude's right behind me. Make him move, make the guard come off so I can get single blocked by the center and give myself a chance. We talked about this ad nauseum last year with our guys playing back. If your guys are playing back, you're in a bad position, because a defensive tackle kit is now taking, you know, four legs, pushing him back into the lap of Quay or whoever's playing linebacker, you know, Devondre, because they're not hitting those gaps. Same situation here. Got to be more aggressive to the line of scrimmage. I'll show this play at the end. This is what we're talking about, and this is kind of an athlete thing and everything, but this is what every coach is coaching right now. You see how far behind six their man coverage is, okay? And then what this does is, because of where they snap this ball, it puts, you got all the action going to the right, and you got this defensive end in a really bad spot where he's got to read it out and come back. He's not really involved in the play. He wouldn't be anyways. But now because you're chasing and the way this ball's thrown, he can plant, you're out leveraged, bad tackling, touchdown. This is what we talk about with, when we say be aligned. What do I mean? I mean that we've got a guy hitting the hole at the linebacker position, but we don't have the proper reaction up top. Okay, there's two things happening here. One, if you're playing the outside leverage, you can't get beat to the outside because you peek in inside. And two, that linebacker can't sit at 5 yards and dance. You got to go. Got to go. Now, same thing here. You got to go now, right? You got four guys playing across here. At this point in the game, you're down a little bit. Four guys playing across. If it's time to go, if you see it, we got to coach it. You got to hit the hole. Go, go, go. You're taking on the my highlighted player with the arrow is taking on a block, right? And part of that's because of the coverage that they're in. But once you see this, man, you got to be aggressive to the ball. Moving around. I probably could have got rid of this play. So we see the man coverage here. I thought this was interesting. So they brought the safety down and they actually lead these linebackers to drop. We got man on nine. He gets beat. That's a touchdown right there, by the way, if you're counting at home, right? Got beat for a touchdown. So out of the backfield, do your linebackers, are they good enough, right, to play with zero safety in the middle? And now you got your safety coming all the way across the field to play in the flat. This guy's beat. That's a problem. They had a touchdown. Good job, because they brought pressure, were able to get rid of the ball. So this is, you know, it's a first down, but it's not the big play. We come downhill at the safety position. Ends up making the tackle. Obviously, you'd like them to be as close as possible to the line of scrimmage. When you get there, close that gap. Plays being made. And then you got to always understand your run rules and man. I thought they did a really nice job here of just understanding your run rules, right? Where your leverage points are, what position you are on the field as far as do I need to turn the guy back. I thought the outside guy did an excellent job here. And you got great fill from the linebackers to make a play. Again, this is, they're down like 31 to 12 or something like that. This is the end of the game. They're trying to run the clock out. Everyone knows it's going to be a run. What are you going to do to stop them? You're crowding the line of scrimmage here. You see this guy, you got this guy hipped off again so he can't get dug out. Now, same look, okay, as we just saw. Now we're going to bring pressure off the line. So he's got to get rid of the ball quick. We play it off. Great call. Love it. Now we got the same issue, though. Peeking in the backfield. I think I'll show the end zone copy of this. So they brought man motion in. He's worried about the outside leverage, but he's still got to respect this guy. So now this six basically gets to take two when you play man. This is kind of the interesting thing with the run game, if you can use your quarterback. When you play man coverage and you have like an Alan Lazard who can dig out this defensive end, at least for the time being, he's kind of taking two guys, right? Because the man player who came in off of motion, it's not like he can just stop looking at this guy to run a pop pass. So he's got to see a lot of stuff right now. And he just gets leveraged, beat. And I think those are just, like, honestly, those are just tough plays. And you have to have answers to them. And I'm sure as a, you know, you start thinking about NFL offenses, teams that can do that kind of stuff with their mobile quarterbacks. I mean, the Bears are going to be running that, I guarantee, nowadays. Right? That's one facet. I mean, that was like Florida State's main thing it seemed like. That's one facet of what the NFL team do. So getting all that in, understanding what the looks are, understanding the reads, understanding you have a process to take care of that no matter what, that's going to be super, super important to these guys to have success. I think the defensive line, when you watch that tape, you know, the takeaway for me is like the defensive line, this could be true with any team, but the defensive line has to really perform in order to make things go there. You got to get penetration. You got to be able to eat up those double teams. I do think some of the drop zone, some of the switch stuff is going to translate differently at the next level. You have better athletes, all of that stuff. My biggest question mark, not like negative question mark, just like can't wait to see, is how they're going to, first of all, how they're going to, when I showed that guy hipped off that was kind of closer to the scrimmage so they couldn't get, who's that going to be? How are they going to use him? And then if it's Nixon, Bullard, Williams, McKinney, like how are three or four of those, there's going to be three of those guys on the field a lot at the same time. How are they going to disguise coverages so it's not always like, oh, we're single safety high again. It's either, you know, is it one or three, oversimplifying the game. But is it man or zone, single safety high? Where's the, you know, like what's possible? Williams of those three guys is the best on the move as far as blitzing. Based off tape, he's the best one. He's still in college kid, but he's the best one of those three. Okay, so if he's in the game. So where do all these guys get utilized? Does this bring in the Oregon State kid because he's a little bigger, more physical? Are we going to have him on the field? Does he have a better opportunity? Like that. So anyways, that position, how those five guys are going to take those three places, probably the most interesting thing for me in watching that tape and kind of think about how it applies to the Packers. Listener questions very quickly, rapid fire. Questions about Morgan and Passport from college. Is that fixed in the weight room or is it technique? We're talking about him going bull rush and stuff. 99% of it is technique. He's a weight room warrior. I know that secondhand. The guy's a hard worker. If he gets the right technical coach, he's going to do a good job. It's going to take time. It's not easy. Retraining your feet, training your hands to work with your feet doesn't happen overnight. Be patient. How do players find an offseason coach? Word of mouth, agent, etc. Have I ever turned down a player looking for coaching? So the way that they find him now is they go, your agent goes on this, finds a guy who has a lot of followers, puts him in there for the combine prep. They have a deal worked out. It's going to cost him X amount of dollars, right? If I send you 10 guys, maybe it's not 30 grand, it's 20 grand, okay? They do that, the upfront cost. That's the combine stuff. So they'll go to these guys to look good, you know, in combine stuff. Then, depending on how their seasons are going, they'll call a guy who's like maybe more of a, I would like to consider myself more as an individualized specialist than maybe some of these guys that you've heard a lot of. Or they'll call some other guys and it's word of, like, I don't advertise, it's word of mouth. I never want my players to have to answer for, hey, why are you working with this guy? Why are you working with that guy? It doesn't matter to me at all. What matters is that you play at an extremely high level, right? I don't care who gets the credit. The player should get all the credit. If the coach wants to take credit, doesn't really bother me at all. As long as, you know, obviously I'm appreciated in the right manner from the guys that I work with. How's that? Have I ever turned down a guy? The answer is I've turned guys down, but not directly. I've never said to a guy, like, I'm not working with you. What I will say is, and my rule is kind of simple. If you set an appointment and you don't show up, probably not going to work out. If you can't be respectful of time, not going to work out. If you don't act in a professional manner, don't have time for you. Okay, probably not your guy. Thoughts on the chop block. Is it dirty? Can be. If you're coming from behind, you blindside a guy at the knee, I think it's bullshit. If you're coming right at a guy, you want to throw on him. I think the same is for the DBs when the offensive lines are running at him. I think DBs should be able to take you out at the knees. I think it's ridiculous they can't. Somebody asked another question about linemen and arm length. Like, final word, please, guys. Like, it is, if you're T-Rex arms, yeah, it's a big deal. If you have average size arms, you're going to be okay. Technique overcomes all. You just have to figure out how it works with your body. It's not just your feet. It's not just your hands. It's how everything interacts, body position, everything, okay? Last thing. This kind of goes back to the offseason stuff. I am super interested in hearing about the new offseason weight program. They just got rid of Chris Gizzi and Mark Levine. Those guys were our top guys in the league, okay? And this S&C staff's from San Fran. I think your guy's from Cincinnati. Like, I'm sure there's some prior relationships with either the head coach or somebody in the building, the reason these guys got hired. Happy for them. I'm sure they're going to do a good job. Just interested to see, are they Olympic guys, kettlebell guys, movement guys? Are they going to work just, you know, hip stability, shoulder stability, neck stability. All right, what are they, right? And how does that interact with what guys are doing before and after in those different phases of the program. I think that's super interesting stuff. I want to see what kind of gains are being made on that side of the building. Does the head coach prioritize gains on that side of the building, and how much so? And is training camp going to change because of those guys as far as how they view acute versus chronic load and all that kind of, it's a very, very interesting kind of dynamic. It's a really, really important position in the building. So anyways, with that, hope that was helpful today, guys. Feel like I'm talking fast. Find me at MikeWall68 on X or Twitter. Prostitute Perform on Instagram. Hit our like button, smash it, subscribe it, rate, review, YouTube, Prostitute Perform. Bye.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.